Okay.
So it's July 7th, Nutkey Street Bible Study, and we are going to be looking at the story of Samson this morning. Mm-hmm. So let's open at Judges 13. Kind of the whole story, mm-hmm. as much as possible, and kind of just make a couple of comments at the end. Okay, so would you like to read chapter 13?
Yeah. Shall I do it in English?
Sure.
The Israelites again did what was offensive to the Lord, and the Lord delivered them into the hands of the Philistines for 40 years. There was a certain man from Zora, of the stock of Dan, whose name was Manoah. His wife was barren and had borne no children. An angel of the Lord appeared to the woman and said to her, "You are barren and have borne no children, but you shall conceive and bear a son. Now be careful not to drink wine or other intoxicant or to eat anything unclean, for you're going to conceive and bear a son. Let no razor touch his head, for the boy is to be a Nazarite to God from the womb on. He shall be the first to deliver Israel from the Philistines." The woman went and told her husband, "A man of God came to me."
Sorry, it just said he will be the first?
Yeah, this is a Jewish translation. Yeah, he shall be the first to deliver.
Is the Bible study?
Yes.
Yeah, come on in.
Nicole.
Oh, you're cool?
So what is it?
No, we'll talk about it in a second.
Okay.
But they have the first to deliver Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
O Yachil Leoshia.
Yachel.
Yachel.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. The woman went and told her husband, "A man of God came to me. He looked like an angel of God, very frightening. I didn't ask him where he was from, nor did he tell me his name. He said to me, 'You're going to conceive and bear a son. Drink no wine or other intoxicant, and eat nothing unclean, for the boy is to be a Nazarite to God from the womb to the day of his death.' Manoah pleaded with the Lord. 'O my Lord,' he said, 'please let the man of God that you sent come to us again, and let him instruct us how to act with the child that is to be born.' God heeded Manoah's plea, and the angel of God came to the woman again. She was sitting in the field, and her husband Manoah was not with her. The woman ran in haste to tell her husband, and she said to him, 'The man who came to me before has just appeared to me.' Manoah promptly followed his wife. He came to the man and asked him, 'Are you the man who spoke to my wife?' 'Yes,' she answered. Then Manoah said, 'May your words soon come true. What rules shall be observed for the boy?' The angel of the Lord said to Manoah, 'The woman must abstain from all the things against which I warned her. She must not eat anything that comes from the grapevine, or drink wine, or other intoxicant, or eat anything unclean. She must observe all that I commanded her.' Manoah said to the angel of the Lord, 'Let us detain you and prepare a kid for you.' But the angel of the Lord said to Manoah, 'If you detain me, I shall not eat your food, and if you present a burnt offering, offer it to the Lord.' For Manoah didn't know that he was an angel of the Lord. So Manoah said to the angel of the Lord, 'What is your name? We should like to honor you when your words come true.' The angel said to him, 'You must not ask for my name. It is unknowable.' Manoah took the kid and the meal offering and offered them up on the rock to the Lord. And a marvelous thing happened while Manoah and his wife looked on. As the flames leaped up from the altar."
Sorry to interrupt you one more time. Did it just, said that his name is unknowable?
That's unknowable, yeah.
Okay, interesting.
His name is marvelous, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's the Jewish...
The JPS,
yeah. So he took that, offered it, and a marvelous thing happened while Manoah and his wife looked on. As the flames leaped up from the altar toward the sky, the angel of the Lord ascended in the flames of the altar, while Manoah and his wife looked on. and they flung themselves on their faces to the ground.
Judges 13.
The angel of the Lord never appeared again to Manoah and his wife. Manoah then realized that it had been an angel of the Lord. And Manoah said to his wife, "We shall surely die, for we have seen a divine being."
Judges 13.
But his wife said to him, "Had the Lord meant to take our lives, he would not have accepted a burnt offering and meal offering from us, nor let us see all these things, and he would not have made such an announcement to us." The woman bore a son, and she named him Samson. The boy grew up, and the Lord blessed him. The Spirit of the Lord first moved him in the encampment of Dan between Zorah and Eshtaol. You know, as I'm reading, what strikes me is that several times he said, the angel of the Lord, and then an angel of the Lord.
In the English.
Is there any difference in the Hebrew?
Yeah, well, it was Malach Adonai.
Or Ha, Malach, Malach.
No, yeah, you, I think there's, I think it's also, yeah, in verse 9, it's Malach HaElohim, so angel of God, but essentially they're the same thing.
Malach HaElohim.
That's verse 9.
The angel of the Lord.
And then after a while, he's right there, watching David go up. So... Sorry, one more question. In 25, how did they translate that again? Verse 25?
The Spirit of the Lord first moved him in the encampment of Dan.
Okay.
Right.
Great. So we're looking at Samson, and we're going to try to condense it, the whole story, and just make some comments about it. The first thing is this first chapter of Samson is his birth story, which is a pretty powerful story if you look at it in relation to the rest of the Bible. What are some other birth stories in the Bible?
Jesus, of course.
Okay, Jesus, but before we get to the New Testament, about the Old Testament.
Old Testament. What kind of stories?
Birth stories, special stories.
That woman, was it the prophet Elisha? The woman in the field?
Yeah, the one that didn't.
The woman that didn't have a baby and her husband was old.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's also a special birth story, but I mean specifically a person who's born and then does special things.
Samuel.
Yeah. Who else?
What was the question again, sir?
Birth stories.
Moses.
Okay, yeah, let's start with birth stories that are special for special people. So Samuel, what's Samuel's story?
His mother was barren.
His mother's barren.
She went to the prophet, and she was crying out to God. They thought she was wrong, and he blessed her with a child.
He gave her a child.
And she said she would give a child to the Lord.
Yeah, right after she was done weaning him, she gave him up. Okay, then the next one was Moses. What was his birth story?
He was born during a time when the midwives are supposed to kill baby boys because of the fear of the Israelites becoming too numerous, and his parents hid him until they could hide him no longer, put him in the river, and the princess, Pharaoh's daughter, raised him as a child of Pharaoh.
So it's similar to Samuel's story in that the mother also gave up her child to God and gave it to Pharaoh, but to protect it, but also to do what God's going to do. What other birth stories?
Isaac. Of course, Sarah couldn't.
So Sarah's barren.
She was old. Yeah.
She can't have a child.
And then Rebecca, same thing.
Samson.
Okay, yeah, right. Well, we just read the Samson.
We're at Yeshua.
Right, before you get New Testament.
So it's both Abraham and Isaac.
Right.
That gets.
What's similar to Isaac's story to Samson's story? Birth story.
Mm-hmm.
the mother's barren, who tells they're going to have a child? Angel. They both have an angel. Samuel doesn't have an angel. Moses doesn't have an angel.
You know, in a way, he was older, but also his mother died. He didn't have it. Although Moses did have his mother around.
But, you know, from a distance, maybe.
Although she nursed him.
Right.
She was one of his sweat nurses.
Which is kind of like Samuel's story, where his mother nursed him.
Exactly.
Also, another thing that seems to go along with these miraculous birth stories is the person who's going to grow up has to be protected. They're going to be killed. People want to kill them or things like that. And in a weird sort of way, I mean, that's kind of like Isaac's story. Mm-hmm. His father was going to kill him. But the angel, even though God told him to kill his son, you know, or sacrifice his son, he was protected by an angel. You brought up Rebecca was barren, right? It says something like that in her story. And also, who else after her was barren?
Rachel.
And who's born from Rachel?
Well, Rachel had the two twins, and
Rebecca did.
Joseph.
Yeah, Joseph.
Oh, that's right.
Right.
Rachel
first had Joseph, and she didn't have Benjamin for a long time. So Joseph was like her only child, and he stood out as special for a lot of reasons. I mean, his whole story is similar to Moses, Samuel, so on. He's, you know, he gets that coat of many colors, and so he sticks out, and in a way, he's protected as well. His brothers were going to kill him when he was 17 or whatever. And so in a way, God is watching over him and protecting him throughout his whole time. Now, I want to, and then we brought up the New Testament with Jesus and also John the Baptist, right? Jesus kind of fits all of these because Herod's trying to kill him. Angel announces his birth. His mother is barren because she's a virgin. It's kind of a reverse logic, but she couldn't be pregnant in the natural sense. And with the Samson story, what's the big thing that stands out about Samson? What is his calling in Judges 13? To be Nazarite, and what does the angel tell Manoah's wife besides being a Nazarite?
Well,
why is Samson
not eating anything that's from the grapevine?
Right, that's all the Nazarite. But is there anything about, I don't know, he's going to do something special? Randy, can you zip off?
He shall be the first to deliver Israel from the Philistines.
Where's that?
That's verse 5.
Wait, verse. Sorry. Where does it say? And he will begin to. Okay, say. All right, so that's kind of his calling.
Mm-hmm. One thing that's different about Shimshon from all the other stories you just mentioned is that, in a sense, Shimshon is the protector. Now, obviously, God gives him the power, but you know, Moses has to be protected by others. Isaac is protected by others, and Jesus is protected by others as a baby.
Right.
Whereas Shimshon simply gets born, and then he's the protector. He takes down the lion. He takes down the Philistines.
Yeah, but the story is very clear that he doesn't do it. The Spirit of God has to come on him.
The Spirit of God does.
Because there's also a couple examples in there where he does these things, where he's in moments of weakness, like he's dying of thirst. Mm-hmm. He's going to die right there, and the Philistines are going to take him. He's scared. You know, I agree with you. You're right. He's different in that. yet he has his Achilles heel, or he's still human, or and it's also interesting about
only too much so.
Right. Yeah, and once we get to the hair part, about does his power really come from his hair? Is that really? Is that more of a, what do you call it when you do a science experiment? No, you know where you give two groups of people. The one group you give a placebo. Is it a placebo? I don't know. But we'll hopefully get to that. So the main thing about Samson is he's a Nazir, Nazirite. And where is the Nazirite vow in the Bible?
Somewhere in the Torah, of course.
Numbers chapter 6. If you want to turn there. Maybe someone wants to read the first 10 verses, chapter 6, Numbers 6. And then it goes on about what he's got to do or she's got to do to fix their vow because it got broken.
So can you say that the long hair is a sign of consecration?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So Gary, most Nazirite vows were just for a season, weren't they? And in Samson's case, it was a life.
Mm. Yeah.
I guess it's... Right.
It's kind of hard to understand it. It was just a short season, probably. Anyone could grow there.
What translation is that?
New
King James.
Yeah, New King James.
Yeah, where they don't say beer, they say.
The end of verse
3.
Middle of verse 2.
What do they say?
Yeah.
Wine and similar drink, neither vinegar made from wine nor vinegar made from similar drink.
That's beer.
Is that beer?
Yeah. So they have chometz yain. The chometz shechar.
Vinegar.
You've translated vinegar of wine and vinegar of beer.
I did.
Mm-hmm. Or whoever did your book here, so.
Yeah, well, that's better than a similar drink.
Right, similar drink. It's erasing beer from the Bible. That translation.
Well, there's an old, long history to erasing it.
Right.
They used to say strong drink.
Right.
And, of course, that's...
Makes you think of whiskey.
Well, that's really misleading in English.
Hmm.
People that used to think of them as whiskey distilled.
So, what are the things that the Nazirite is not supposed to do?
Not touch a dead person.
Sorry?
Not touch a dead body.
Not touch a dead body.
Cut their hair.
So no razor touches the head, the hair grows wild, and no alcohol. And specifically, besides beer and wine, specifically the grapevine. So no seed, no grape seeds, no grape skins.
And you have to do a sacrifice.
Raisins.
No grape leaves. You can't put rice.
Filled grape leaves. Really?
Right.
And they had to have a blood sacrifice, didn't they?
Only in
numbers it may not mention it, but I think the Nazarite vow. That's why Paul had to do that in the New Testament.
Right. No, there's sacrifices involved. But
only
what
after
I'm seeing here is, yeah, only right. after they've broken the vow.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe further on it goes into... Right, but there's definitely sacrifices involved in some way. I'm not an expert in that. So this is the Nazarite vow. And going back to Samson's story in Judges 13, is there a similarity to what the angel tells the mother of her future child? It's all basically the same, right? Right, no beer, no wine.
But does he say that he can't touch the dead person? I don't see that.
Okay, that I think is in the next chapter.
Touching the dead, yeah. It's not in 13.
It's not there. I thought it was there.
It only says eating something unclean. It doesn't say touching the dead or touching something unclean.
It's just the Samson story. We can't find where it says don't touch the
dead. Well, he says maybe in the next chapter.
Oh my goodness, there's stuff.
In the Samson story, but not touching
him. Of course,
but he touches
in chapter 14, he has the dead lion.
That's the problem.
And the honey.
And honey?
What? The dead lion.
Which makes it doubly dirty.
So did you find anything about the dead?
Well, he killed a lion.
No, I know he does that. But does he get a specific command?
Not yet.
Okay. I mean, it's implied, because it says it's a Nazir. Number 6 says the Nazir doesn't touch the dead. So that'll go into the whole undercurrent in this story.
Maybe he said when they have to do, I don't know, but that it's implied because if they have to do the ritual, the offering, if they have touched somebody that has died? No, I don't know.
Right. If someone's dead.
Well, it says it in Judges 13,
So the question is tum'ah, is that, that's a big general thing.
That's everything.
Right.
It's just uncleanness.
Right, anything that is commanded by the Torah that's unclean, so like pig or... All the above.
Like dead bodies.
Dead bodies.
Like jawbones.
Is women in menstruation.
And you see how he cut his hair like the Nazarite should and start over?
Right. Right. Well, that's why at the end of the day, we should rethink if he's really a Nazarite. Even though that's what the angel commanded. That he will be, but was he a real Nazarite? So let's talk about Nazarites. Do we have other Nazarites in the Bible?
John the Baptist.
Okay, so John the Baptist and Luke.
I have a question.
Yep. chapter 1.
It doesn't say in number 6 that the Nazarite refrains from the other sex. So the reason I bring that up is if this idea of uncleanness is in there, aren't people unclean for the day until sundown if they have sex?
So it can't include that.
I don't know.
So, sorry, Luke 1.
Well, Gary, the question was, what about sex and the Nazarite?
Can they have sex?
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't say they can't.
But it implies they're not supposed to become unclean.
Ever.
And of course, you know, the high priest, if he has an omission, gets
unclean,
whisked out, and is not allowed to be high priest that day.
The whole day.
It's not that long a time, but yeah. The point is that, well, it might be considered a lower level of uncleanness.
I mean, you can't just go to the meat park and that doesn't do it.
It doesn't do it. Well, it says.
He's supposed to shave his head.
He should do that and wait until sundown.
Even the priest is supposed to shave his body or something. I forget at which point for different things.
What? At his dedication.
Right, like their eyebrows, right?
All everything.
Hair on their body.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only thing mentioned here is what would be called corpse uncleanness number 6, which was the most severe degree. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Luke chapter 1, example of John the Baptist. Luke 1, verse 15. This is what Gabriel says to Zechariah, the father of John the Baptist. For he will be great in the sight of the Lord. He is never to take wine or other fermented drink, which is probably, I wonder what it is in the Greek. I wonder if
it's
sikera. Sikera, right. So he will not take wine or beer. And he will be filled with the Holy Spirit even from birth.
The perk.
To be filled with the Holy Spirit. Yeah.
From birth.
Yeah. What about elsewhere in the Bible? Do we have other Nazarites?
What's a spirit-filled baby look like?
Spirit-filled baby one?
What does it look like?
Oh. I don't know.
You have an answer, yeah.
I don't.
Have you experienced it your own way?
I don't think so.
Do they sleep well at night or do they scream all night? They're so full of the Spirit.
Or there's some unnamed ones in Acts 21, aren't there? When Paul has to purchase.
Right, right.
They're unnamed.
Right, no, I'm thinking of special Nazarites like John the Baptist. From birth. And one that people usually don't think about is go to 1 Samuel chapter 1. Hannah, she's at Shiloh, and Eli, the priest, is sitting on a chair by the doorpost of the Lord's temple. And she's crying, you know, she's barren. Verse 10. 1 Samuel 1:10, in bitterness of soul, Hannah wept much and prayed to the Lord, and she made a vow, saying, O Lord Almighty, if you will only look upon your servant's misery and remember me and not forget your servant, but give her a son, then I will give him to the Lord for all the days of his life, and no razor will ever be used on his head. And in the Hebrew, it's the same thing that the angel says to Samson's mother. No razor will go upon his head. umora lo yale al rosho. So.
But Samuel married, right?
And right, but sons. But Nazareth. Yeah. Well, this is just something that Randy's bringing up.
I was expecting a question.
Right.
How far
does it go? But so. Two things are interesting. One is, if Samuel is a Nazarite, he—that means he has long hair like Samson.
Mm-hmm.
Shmuel, yeah. And the other thing is, in Samson's case, he never had a choice about being a Nazarite.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of sent by God, you're going to be a Nazarite. Whereas Samuel didn't have a choice either. It's his mom making the vow, but it's her choice to say, oh, you know, I make this vow, you know, he's going to go into the ministry. And so it's quite interesting, the similarity, but the difference between the two of them. And also in verse 12, after she's made this vow, Ellie looks at her, sees her mouth, and she's praying and her lips are moving, and he thought she was drunk, and he tells her, you know, get rid of your wine. And she says, I'm a woman who's deeply troubled, I've not been drinking wine or beer. So again, that's kind of that Nazarite motif of not drinking wine and beer.
But you just translated it, not been drinking, but well, it just says shatiti.
The NIV translated it, have not been drinking.
You learn Hebrew.
That's right, there's Bible translators. So you're trying to say...
She did drink wine, but on this occasion she wasn't.
Right.
Simple past.
She didn't use the open-ended structure that Hebrew had available. Use the simple one that fits the singular context there.
And what's the pay?
The pay is that when she says I didn't, she just says I didn't drink beer or wine, and she's explaining why in this instance
she's not drunk.
It doesn't logically affect before or after.
Right.
She's not saying she never drank wine,
right,
or that she never will drink wine. She's saying, you think I'm drunk, but I didn't drink wine or beer.
Right, but the translation, I have not been drinking, if I'm an English speaker, that could be like, I have not recently been drinking.
Okay, yeah, you could say that if you were, that's true, if you were stopped by a...
So it's not a horrible translation.
That's true.
All I'm trying to say is that it's...
But in the context that you said it, it sounded like...
Oh, yeah, she's never drank wine or beer. No. I wasn't saying that. I was just saying that there's just some threads there of, you know, the whole Nazarite thing.
Gary, is it true that other pagan religions also did this thing of never cutting hair? It's a borrowed thing into Judaism. I mean, it's a shared thing, right? It's
not cutting hair.
Judaism. Yeah.
Probably.
I read it somewhere, I think.
Yeah.
It isn't just specific to Judaism.
Right. I mean, I would think so. And if anyone else knows anything, please get specifics. Share. So, kind of bringing all of this together now, Samson's got this amazing birth story. He has this amazing call on his life. And what happens in his life? Let's quickly look at the next three chapters. Chapter 14, 15, and 16. I will I'll summarize, and you can be looking on in chapter 14. And quickly, Samson goes down to Timnah, which is a Philistine city, and he finds a girl there that he wants to marry. What's the problem with this? What was God's call upon his life back in chapter 13?
Nazareth.
Be Nazareth, and what was the one phrase? What's he supposed to do?
delivers people
from the Philistines.
So
okay, so why is he intermarrying with them? Why does he want to intermarry with the Philistines?
Mm.
That's a problem.
Running away from his call.
Right. Then it says that his parents are like, can't you find a girl from our people?
Mm.
And he says, no, I want her. And then it's the writer puts an interesting note in there that, but God was using this as an occasion to against the Philistines. So that's kind of interesting if you start thinking about there's all kinds of ways people can make weird theology about how God can use our wrong choices. But I won't go into that because that would be crazy. Then Samson goes down, and verse 5, him and his parents, and on the way probably to ask for her hand in marriage, they come in verse 5 to the vineyards of Timnah. Okay, another red flag. What's the problem with this?
He shouldn't touch any vine.
Right, so if he's walking through vineyards and a leaf were to rub against him or something, it just doesn't, it's not very wise. And it probably was hard to be a Nazirite anyways, because there's so many grape vines in this country.
Mm.
I can't imagine doing it your whole life. So he kills a lion there, a young lion. And it specifically says in verse 6 that the spirit, Ruach Adonai, came upon him and gave him that, filled him up. And so he rips the lion apart. Later on, he comes back, I guess because he's going back and forth between Timnah and Sorah. And Sorah is up in the... on the mountain, the last edge of the Judean mountains, hills coming down to the Shvelah where the Philistines are, and Timnah's down here. So all the time the story talks about, and he went down to Timnah. And then if he was leaving Timnah to go back, it says that he went up Sorah. So it's physically and it's literally like that. And so another time he's coming back to Timnah, and he passes by the lion that he's killed, and there's a carcass there. And what's in the carcass?
Beehive
honey. And what's he do?
He scoops it up and eats it.
And he that's bad because it's dead, it's tuma. But what's even worse is he gives it to his parents.
Yeah.
And he doesn't tell them. And here's another thing.
In a vineyard.
That's right. And who else is kind of a Nazirite besides Shimshon?
His mother.
Here's a question. Everybody I read talks about his mother was a Nazirite only for her pregnancy. But I don't see anything in the text that says it's only for your pregnancy. Hmm. So maybe she's still a Nazirite as well. But I can't prove that. So it's kind of bad that he's doing sin, he's sinning basically, or he's being impure, and he's causing impurity upon his family as well. Then you come to verse 10, he comes to do his wedding feast, and it's called the Mishte, which in Hebrew is specifically drinking alcohol.
It's a drinking party.
It's a drinking party, yeah. And it's for 7 days. So they're drinking, they're consuming a lot of alcohol. Again, that's not good for a Nazirite. It doesn't actually say that he drank alcohol here, but if you read his whole story in context, it would be very much implied. And he gives off this riddle, which sounds like something a drunk person would do. You know, like, hey, you know, let's play Russian roulette, or I'll bet all my money against. And the riddle about the honey's coming out of the lion, and the Philistines can't figure it out, and so they have his wife pressure him, so finally he gives it to her. And what's wrong with this picture again? Who is Samson sitting with? Who is he living with? And who is he eating with?
Philistines.
All Philistines. He's supposed to be fighting the Philistines, but instead he's partying with the Philistines. And so they figure it out. They get upset. You know, Samson gets upset at his wife for doing that. So he goes down and he kills 30 guys in Ashkelon, and he brings their clothes back. He kills 30 Philistines and brings their clothes back to the Philistines that are there in Timnah. And then he leaves his wife. He marches off in a huff. Okay, so that's basically 14. And then Samson's wife is given to his best man, one of the guys there at the party. Chapter 15. The only thing Samson's done so far against the Philistines is kill 30 of them. And why did he kill 30 of them?
As revenge.
Because he was mad. And as revenge, but it's a personal revenge. It's nothing that the Philistines did against the Israelites. It's just that Samson was probably drunk, and he just did what he wanted to do.
He was gambling debt.
Right. So we come to 15. We're going to have the same type of incident. He comes to his wife in Timnah. Who knows how long it's been.
Why did the drinking not break his strength? And then Herod did.
Or anything else he did.
Right, or anything else. The dead lion. Yeah, that's what I was saying.
The cutting of hair was just the final straw.
Or maybe it is just, it's a symbol or a placebo or something that, yeah, because it doesn't say that the hair is where your strength comes from in chapter 13 in his birth. When the angel comes, they don't say, well, you're right, you know, it doesn't say, it's just the hair.
Oh, you think I mean him Delilah would be the major offense more than the hair.
Or
one would have thought.
Yeah. So he comes back to Timnah and after who knows, a year, months, who knows how long, and he finds that his wife is not his wife anymore. She's with another guy. So what does he do in response to that? He declares his innocence and then does a lot of nasty stuff.
Is it the horses?
The foxes, right?
Mm-hmm.
He burns.
I am innocent. Anything I do now, I'm innocent.
I can do whatever I want. So he burns down the Philistines' wheat. And I remember growing up, the story is that Samson lights the foxes and they run around and they burn the field. But if you look specifically in verse 5, after he lights the torches in their tails, it says he also burns their
vineyards,
their threshed grain to the olive grove, to the standing grain. So there, it seems to me he's like lighting matches right there. He's not just letting the foxes kind of do it randomly. He's also purposely burning stuff down. And again, he's hurting the Philistines, but why is he doing it? Because of personal vengeance, not because of a national liberation against the enslavers of our people.
To say nothing of the miracle of being able to catch the
inhabitants.
Right.
Yeah.
Or the other stuff he does. So what do the Philistines then do? They burn his Philistine wife and father alive in there. They burn them up.
Mm-hmm.
That's in verse 6.
Yeah.
So then, what does he do? Again, he responds with vengeance, and he puts a beating on them in verse 8. doesn't say how many people he kills, but he does a makakadola, a great blow, a great hit. So now the Philistines, this is kind of like the Hatfields and the McCoys, where one person inflicts damage, or one clan inflicts damage, then they come back and inflict damage, and it's back and forth against families. Of course, so far, Samson's the only one who's being hurt. Or he's not being hurt, but it's really just affecting him. Okay, it's true, his Philistine wife and her father do get killed, so they are collateral damage for what he did. But and now he's hiding in a rock, and now the Philistines come up with 3,000 men. So now it's being escalated and it's being amped up, and they come to the Israelites. And how do the Israelites respond to the Philistines coming for war? Like, why are you doing this to us? We don't want anything to do with Samson. He's not of us. And what do the Israelites do to him? Do they defend him? Do they? They just hand him over like he's, you know, he's nothing to them. And yet it's funny, how many years is Samson supposed to be the judge in Israel? The chief, if you want to call it that. What's it say? Verse 20, it says he's for 20 years he rules Israel. So he was not a very popular president. And so we all know this story. Samson's brought to the Philistines, and then he breaks his ropes, and then he slaughters, is it a thousand? Let's see. You're right.
A thousand, yeah.
In verse 15, he kills 1,000 Philistines, and what's he do it with?
A jawbone.
A jawbone of a donkey, Hamor. And then there's a nice poetic summary of how he did that with the Hamor time. And that's a whole nother, would be something nice to look at it. If you want to look at poetry and how it relates to stuff.
And that's also a dirty thing, is that it's a dead animal.
Right, so he picks up a dead animal.
Cat one cat.
And he slaughters him. Also, I think it would be hard for a Nazir to be a warrior in general, because they have to kill people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so he's dying.
Why can't they kill people?
Why can't they? Well, because when you kill someone, they die. And remember in number 6 it says if someone immediately dies right by you, you're not supposed to touch them or whatever.
You're not supposed to touch them after you kill them.
It's true, but it would be more difficult to have that profession.
Yeah, so.
And God says David was unclean for that reason, right?
Right.
Right. Right.
So, and finally, chapter 16. The conclusion of Samson's life. He goes down to Gaza. Gaza is like the capital. It's the chief city of the Philistines. And there were five main cities of the Philistines: Gaza, Ashdod, Ashkelon, Ekron, and Gat, which, you know, Goliath comes from Gat. So, and Timnah is further out towards the Israel side, further inland. The Ashdod, Ashkelon, and Gaza are on the coast. And so now the story's intensity is like it's ramping up, because now it says he goes to Gaza. Gaza is the capital. He's going into the lair of the devil as far as the enemy. And what's he doing there?
It's a woman.
What kind of woman?
A prostitute.
He's visiting a Philistine prostitute in Gaza. So it's just the irony of ironies. And this one story talks about, I'm sure he did it more than once, but he's surrounded by the Philistines and he knows that they're waiting for him. And so another display of his strength in verse 3 is he carries the gates of the city to Hebron, which is 40 miles. Right, it's 40 miles away. So he carries the gates of Gaza to Hebron. Again, it's like, wow, that's an awesome story. It should be like on the it would be on the front page of the newspaper. And finally, we come to Delilah, which everybody, she's one of the most famous women in the Bible, even in history. Her name is synonymous with many things.
Okay, this is the prostitute from Gaza?
No, this is another woman.
Another one.
Delilah. Mm-hmm. It doesn't say that she's Philistine. It says she's from Nahal Solek. But I think you can assume she probably is Philistine. And so she is there, and we all know the story.
She's in good relations with him anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If he would be a metaphor for like a
preacher?
No, a group, some sort of within society, he'd be like an anarchist.
Or an individualist.
But a whole group of anarchists, right, in society, like, who just do crazy stuff.
What they want.
You know, who are vandalizing and wreaking havoc and but are
he's like a computer virus.
Right. But are so sizable. Like, imagine anarchists being so sizable within a society that they now represent, like, I don't know, 30% of the population, where they've already society's already lost control.
Right.
Over them.
Right.
Maybe they even represent the majority, and they're now the biggest bloc in parliament.
Right.
And they're now the ruling bloc in parliament.
Right.
That'd be like the equivalent of what Samson is, and they're doing crazy stuff like this, both to the neighboring country and to...
He's bad for politics.
Yeah, that's what it would be like to have the anarchist party,
right,
in control.
Right.
What Samson's doing.
A party that doesn't recognize the government.
Yeah, and just does crazy stuff like this.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, it is the government, yeah.
So, real quick, in the next 5 minutes, to sum up, his hair is cut, and the Philistines capture him. They put out his eyes, which is interesting. Why would they put out his eyes? What's the significance of that? That could be talked about. They put him in a grinding, like a mill, where he grinds, I think it's grain. And then one day they decide, so he's in prison basically, grinding grain. And one day the Philistines decide to have a party in Gaza at their temple of Dagon. And his hair is grown out at that point. And he gets put between two pillars, or somehow he puts himself like that. And he prays to God, and he says, you know, this one last time, help me out. And specifically, what does he say? Like, why does he want to do this right now? Do you remember his prayer?
Give me one last go.
He says in verse 16:28, he says, so I can have vengeance about them putting out my eyes.
No. Again.
Yeah, it's not about these are Philistines, they're the enemies of our people.
Or let me restore honor to God.
Yeah, it's about vengeance again.
And it's about him.
And it's about him. So this is what I just want to bring up here is, unlike all the other, you know, this is the book of Judges, Shoftim. Who's the last judge in the book of Judges? Samson is. So there's something significant about Samson being the last judge in the book of Judges. Samuel also is called a judge and so on, but in the book of Judges, he's put at the end to be noticed. And right after he rules as judge, Israel goes crazy. The people, that's the story of, you know, where the concubine is cut up or she's raped.
Yeah.
And the Benjamites, it's just, it's all crazy. They just, they look like a, the sons of Israel look like a bunch of pagans, according to these stories. And so, Samson rules for 20 years. But remember back in chapter 13, verse 1, it said that now they did evil in the sight of the God, in the sight of the Lord, and for 40 years they were under the Philistines' rule. So did Samson ever free the people against their, from their enemies?
No, he was a failed redeemer.
He failed.
Yeah.
He failed. All the other judges, I haven't gone and double-checked this, but I was reading this, they all had some type of success of freeing the people from the Midianites or whoever they were fighting. They were able to free their people. Did Samson ever lead the Israelites to war?
No. These people of Judah come to him and said, listen, the Philistines are ruling over us, so why are you doing this?
Right.
See, it's like they're accepting the rule of the Philistines over them.
And they don't accept his rule,
yeah,
his leadership. Whenever he fights, does he ever fight with an army? No, it's just himself. Again, if you read the other stories of the redeemers, the judges, they always come with an army to, and fight their enemies. So they're, it's more about community. And again, he's never fighting for the people of Israel. He's fighting for his own personal vengeance. And on top of that, his birth and his death are more significant than what he does during his life. His birth, because it, again, it's a very special birth story, like Isaac, like Samuel, like so many other people, and yet he doesn't have any results in between that are worthy of praise when it comes to the big picture. He does supernatural things like a superhero does, which are great for comic books, but regarding real life, he's not bringing deliverance and salvation. And his death is a cowardly death. It's a suicide bomber, where he kills himself, and he does kill 3,000 Philistines. But again, there is no payoff. His people are not freed from the Philistines. Mm-hmm. All he did was bring on more bloodshed. So that's
God helps him though.
God helps him, and that's the great thing to try to think
irony.
About. Irony, paradox. He's a living, walking oxymoron. So, Shabbat Shalom.
What's that?
Shut
up. Do you think it's right for churches to...